Welcome to our newest adventure for first responder wellness. No one fights alone. In-depth conversations about mental health and culture in the first responder space. We're joined by your co-hosts, Austin Pedersen and Brad Shepard.
What's up, bro? It's good to be back.
Another day, another dollar.
Another day, another dollar. I'm just going to dive into this one. We were talking about kind of what we wanted to talk about, and I'm not sure whether you brought it up or I brought it up, but I think this is a good time. There's just a lot of shit going on. I had a friend lose a friend. I didn't directly know this person, but another suicide this past week. Yeah. And you know, the impact of that shit.
Yeah. Man. I mean, same thing. I had a friend. I was actually really, really close at a point in time in my life with his brother. But yeah, he took his own life 10 days ago, something like that. So people are struggling, and it's, you know, and I believe it was Brooke Bartlett that talked about when she was here that talked about, you know, a lot of people view suicide as one of the most selfish acts, whereas people that are in the act of completing suicide believe it's the exact opposite, right? Which is
complete opposite.
Yeah, which is I'm saving everybody else from me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she was fascinating to talk to. She's a Thomas Joyner fan, follower, whatever whatever that is. I'm not a clinician, but you know, we talk some of Thomas Joyner's stuff's really fascinating. If you're looking at and interested at all in kind of diving into the complexity of what that is, Joyner's has done a lot of work, suicidologist. But you know, I think it's a great opportunity to actually talk about the impact for us. And by us, I mean, not just you and I, but us as a, you know, two conversationalists with some people out here listening, the impact of, it doesn't have to just be suicide, but the impact of life sometimes on us, with specifically the topic of grief and loss. You know, those are hard to decipher sometimes, and sometimes even hard to recognize in our lives that we should just pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and keep on going. And this shouldn't impact us the way it does, but you kind of sit down for a minute, you pause a second, and you're like, holy shit, this is, something's off. Something's different.
Well, the thing about grief and loss is that no matter who you are, at some point in your life, you are going to experience this. This is the natural progression of life, right? Whether it's a friend, a sibling, a parent, a dog, whatever it may be, at some point in your life, you are going to have to go through this. It is the natural progression, and we don't think about it like that, right? We don't think about that one day I'm going to have to deal with this. It usually comes with comes suddenly, right? Like tragic losses and things like that. There are experiences where people know that their parent, like, you know, they've been preparing for a long time for this to happen, whether they were sick or older or whatever it may be. But that's the thing, is every single person can somehow feel connected to this because they're going to experience it.
No, I think we've learned a lot. I certainly agree 100% with you. Somewhere you're going to have this is going to touch your life somehow.
Yeah.
This is just, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we've learned a lot. Most of us, if we've been around in this community and at all, we're familiar with the, you know, the five stages of grief, you know, the, what is it? Denial, anger, bargaining. I'm doing this off the cuff. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, right? That's the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross model of stages of grief. And, I think we've learned a lot that there's actually more to that. Mm-hmm. I think it certainly set the tone and was, I believe, I'm not a clinician, but I believe she was somewhat of a, you know, a trendsetter and forging ahead and kind of diving into this. And I don't think it's all that, it's not an old concept. I mean, it's pretty recent of really deep diving into some of this grief. And from what I've been taught, with the five stages of grief is that it's a little bit more complex, that you don't do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that it's, you're all over the map with it. And there's more complexities with those stages. No doubt you may be in one of those stages, but they look, it's just fucking messy, man.
Yeah, but I also think that it's a continuing cycle, right? Because there can be, it's a day by day thing, in my opinion, because I can see people, and myself included, where one day I have reached the acceptance level. Well, a month later, I could be back in the denial, you know, or, you know, same thing, right? Like it's a forever continuing cycle, and it's a day by day piece. And it's also a little bit focused off of your own mental health and how you're doing at that time. And each person is going to be different. You know, I've seen people that have initially they're okay. And then, 5 years later, they're like, hey, this actually really fucked me up. And now I'm, you know, doing EMDR, brain spotting, or whatever it may be, because 5 years down the road, I've realized that I'm not over this. And there's been a lot of consequences to dealing with that, right? Like, you sent some great stuff over to me before, but I'm looking at this like these signs and symptoms from the mental health standpoint and the behavioral standpoint and the physical standpoint. Like, it's really good stuff, and go over it a little bit for us, because I'm pretty impressed with this.
So this is, you know, this is some stuff that I do. Some of our listeners may not know this, but I love keeping my, in tune with Chateau House and still doing some of the hands-on work aside from the business development and marketing side. But, this is just some things that I've done some plagiarizing. I steal from people who know much more than I do about this.
As you should.
I compartmentalize this a little bit into some categories, and I think this might be helpful to listeners, and we just tackle them. It's a mental, behavioral, physical, and emotional impact of loss. And I think it'd be kind of cool to go over some of them. The mental aspect, I'll just read off a kind of a quick list. Preoccupation with loss, decreased attention span, short-term memory loss, difficulty concentrating, hard to problem solve, confusion, suicidal thoughts or even planning, intrusive flashbacks or intrusive images, nightmares, rumination, disorientation, uncertainty, hypervigilance, and time motion disparity. You know what? Oddly enough, I was just talking to one of our former clients. He's back, and he was talking about the time. Now that he's actually had a chance to actually base out and get on this healthy journey, he's like, time is so much different. Mm-hmm. And I found that conversation really interesting.
Well, I mean, some of the most common symptoms, though, it does feel like, are nightmares, flashbacks. The interesting ones that I found were the decreased attention span, short-term memory loss, rumination, disorientation. Like those, these are all, and I'll speak from a personal level, right? From a couple weeks ago, there was a 3 or 4 day period where there was a difficulty concentrating for me, a intrusive flashbacks of the suicide itself, just because I knew where it happened. I spent a lot of time in my life in this particular spot, location, and the uncertainty of what's next, right? Like these are all fresh, new feelings for me. And I'm also thinking, sitting there going like, what's going on with me, man? Like, I'm just off. And I think a lot of people go through these but don't actually realize they're going through them, because they go into like a little bit of survival mode where they're just trying to continue, right? That day, right? Let's just get this day over with. Let's keep moving. Or if you go from some of the male perspective of like, man, I'm just going to have to push past this and get over it because it is what it is.
Well, isn't that, I do want to give a space at the end to kind of talk about the totality of this, but so commonly we end up, well, something's mm-hmm. off, or maybe even something more disparaging to ourselves or the narrative we start telling. Okay, I'm just going to pretend like I'm normal. And that's when you start, you know, this really, let's call it what it is, this really dishonest conversation you have with yourself of, okay, I'm going to act like nothing's wrong and pretend like nothing's wrong. And then you start, it's avoidance coping and avoidance with really some of the really prevalent things. And to your point that you made originally, this happens to all of us. And maybe it's impactful greatly to you and not as impactful to me. So then we start looking at, well, Austin and I, we have the same, we knew the same person, same event, same thing, same everything, right? This is this trauma comparison danger road we go down. It's impacting me greatly, but he is looking like it's not impacting him at all. Mm-hmm. So what's wrong with me? So I need to act like nothing's wrong. You know, that's that dangerous road.
The No One Fights Alone podcast is excited to announce the launch of our new merchandise line. Now you can show your support for our mission by purchasing one of our hats, shirts, or hoodies. Our merchandise not only represents our brand and message, but also supports a great cause. A portion of all proceeds will go towards helping individuals and families affected by mental health. Wearing our merchandise not only spreads awareness for our podcast, but also serves as a reminder that no one has to fight alone. Join us in showing your support and spreading the message of hope and community by purchasing one of our No One Fights Alone items today from our website, nofapodcast.com, nofapodcast.com.
This, I think that these mental thought processes and stages that you're going through lead into the next portion, right? Like when you don't address the feelings that you're going through, this is the consequence, which is go into it now, which is the behavioral aspects of it.
I think that's a really an awesome point. And I maybe should have thought this through a little bit about how we unpack this, but this is a great point. Maybe we should talk about the emotional next before we talk about the behavioral and physical.
Yeah.
So let's do that. I think you bring up a great point. So we talk about the mental, let's talk about some of the emotional things that you might feel. And then there'd be an outward expression to some of these. Emotional is shock, confusion, denial, lowered self-esteem. If you're listening to this, I think, you know, some of them may hit home with you. Some of them may be more subtle, but I think they're all red flags.
Yeah.
You know, you should pay attention to all of them. Anger itself, abandonment, resentment, despair. Let me back up to the resentment. That doesn't necessarily have to be resentment to maybe the, you know, if we're talking about suicide now, the friend, that could be resentment towards yourself. Like, yeah. I should have done something. I should have, you know, that's a big word that people should spend some time on.
Common towards ourselves, which is, I should have seen this. I should have done something about it. I could have done something about it. Like those are more common than the resentment towards the person that, you know, had completed suicide or even had passed away.
Sure. Despair, panic, overwhelmed, guilt, regret, feeling lonely, denial, not feeling at all, blame, frustration, numbness, agitation, impending doom. Those are heavy.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are the ones we shut down, right? Like we are pushing these emotions away.
I think these are much more subtle. You know, these are much more, you know, I don't want to feel that away, so I'm going to avoid that. Or is this true? Is this real? You know, I've told several people, and I think I may even said it on one of the podcasts recently, but this past holidays was really sad for me. And I have some ideas as to why. But I quit trying to intellectualize it and actually just sit back and existed in it, which is part of what we preach, you know, of just saying, and at least being honest with myself and saying, hey, this is a sadness that I'm not even going to try to explain. I think I know why. I have some ideas as to why, but it doesn't change that's where my emotional state was. And if I had a message, and maybe you can speak to it as well, but if I had a message for anybody listening that, you know, this list, if you're experiencing some of this, I would just encourage you to just exist in it and acknowledge it's there. Maybe you don't have an explanation for it, or maybe you do, but to narrate yourself and talk yourself, convince yourself that it doesn't exist is a dangerous path.
Yeah. It's a little bit about acceptance, right? Like, you know, there's the old saying that you can't make yourself feel something different sometimes, right? Like, there's coping tools and mechanisms, but like, if you are angry that somebody passed away, it's okay to be angry, right? Like, it is a natural feeling to be angry at the situation, how unfair it can be, all of those type of things. And that acceptance portion is key to moving past it. Because if you bite that anger down and say, no, I'm not going to feel this, it's just going to stay and it's going to linger and it's going to be there and it's going to continue to gnaw away at you. Now, anger is just one example, but all of these emotions, you can put that in for all of them.
Sure. Regret, loneliness, similar. That's what comes to mind when you're sitting there thinking, you know, I'm thinking about what you're saying. You know, oftentimes we internalize this guilty feeling of I should have done something, mm-hmm. Or could I have done something, or these are really painful.
Yeah, they suck.
But they're real.
They suck.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So if we look at, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but these are the natural stages. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we look at the behavioral, these are just kind of starting to become outward expressions of some of these, increased alcohol use, changes in, drug use or abuse. Maybe you're taking a little more, pain medicine than what you were. Destructive activities, risk taking sexual habits, harm to self or others, sleep disturb, and that's not just physical harm, but emotional mm-hmm. harm, you know, yelling and, such sleep disturbances. And as you know, we know now that sleep is the greatest life hack to a health mm-hmm. journey, which is why we work so hard at it at Chateau. And I know others do as well. I find it fascinating that the sleep conversations are so prevalent now. A lot of people talk about sleep, insomnia. That's the sleep issue as well. Isolation, increased absenteeism, which is, you know, part of that isolating. I'm just not going to show up. I don't want to go. I don't want to go to a family event. I don't want to go out with friends when they invite me. You quit showing up and people quit asking. Increased crying, antisocial acts, inability to rest. What are your thoughts on that list?
What I find interesting about the behaviors portion of this is, you know, the first few segments we talked about were very internal, right? They were very how we feel personally. This behaviors list starts to affect everybody else in our life. Now you gotta, we all know, right? Increased alcohol use or drug use, whatever it may be, that's going to start affecting the family. That's going to start affecting the spouse, bills, living situations, all of those type of things. Destructive activities, they're going to start affecting your job. They're going to start affecting your you know, same things, families, everything like that. And then as these start to go down, right, like we have found out that there's only a small percentage of the country or of people in the world that can go off of 5 hours of sleep a night, very small percentage that are okay with that. Your sleep is going to start affecting everything else. You're going to increase absenteeism. You're going to start losing friends, right? Like, and that's a huge portion of your support system, people that understand you or know how you're feeling. You know, crying, antisocial, inability to rest, like all of these things start to affect the outer portions of your life, the external portions of your life, which then will make the full circle once again back to these destructive inner feelings about ourselves.
I just, I really think that it's important to at least acknowledge that some of these things are not just, you know, being sick. Often I've talked to many people that, you know, verbalize, and I was having this conversation this morning, verbalize, you know, I can't figure out why I keep getting sick. And, you know, these are outward symptoms of an internal, possibly grief issue of loss of, you know, and I think it's important to point out, I should have done this early, that we oftentimes associate loss with just the loss of a loved one or loss of life. And there are many, many, different ways to receive loss of a pet, loss of a home, loss of friendship, the loss of a job, loss of an income, financial change, you know, even the child of a divorce, situation. I mean, there's just these, and the impact of those are just enormous. So I probably should have acknowledged that early on that these can all be a part of this loss piece. So, let's look at the physical. Looks like changes in appetite, difficulty sleeping, headaches, stomach aches, digestive problems, low energy, lack of energy, trembling, hearing things, seeing things, vomiting, weakness, chest pain, increased blood pressure, difficulty breathing, increased heart rate, fainting, nausea, restlessness. I mean, and these are not exhaustive lists. These are just, you know, a few of some of the physical outward expressions and emotional changes and mental and emotional impacts that loss has on us. But what does that when I read that list, how does that list strike you?
I mean, they're all applicable, right? Like these are all pretty standard, especially when you're working in the mental health field and you're seeing these things go on. I mean, like all of these are pretty standard. The change in appetite, increase or decrease, right? You use food as a coping mechanism or you just stop eating completely. And that can include increased caffeine, you know, intake, those type of things. Sleeping's once again in it. But then all of these physical symptoms that people are going through, they're all going to affect your daily functioning capabilities, right? Like as humans, I think what we want to do each day is just function correctly. Like, and if we're not operating at our optimal level, we'll never be able to do what we need to do, whether that's be there for your kids, your wife, whether it's show up to work, whether it's any of those things. Like this grief cycle, when it's not taken care of and not addressed, is going to start really affecting you in all aspects, right? That's what I keep going back to, is like all of these signs and symptoms are all things that people experience all of the time, but they may not attribute it to grief.
They may just think they're not feeling good, or like what we actually, you know, generically said at the beginning of this conversation, I think you brought it up. You're just feeling off. You're just off. And then you don't actually give merit to, or take an honest self-evaluation of, what is off? Why am I off? I don't want it to be about the loss of my friend. I don't want it to be about the loss of, you know, if we make this about a first responder, the first responderville that we live in, loss of a unit. I know recently I was talking to a police officer that was greatly impacted over not getting into a unit that they were wanting. And the loss of that was just enormous, because they had their heart set on this, and or getting kicked out of units. You know, I got kicked out of 3 units in my career. It was, you know, well deserved, but the impact of that was enormous. Those were, I poured everything, my heart and soul, into those things. So this isn't just about loss of life. This could be loss of something that you so greatly desired that you'd poured everything into it. Your investment of self is huge. So I think it's more about acknowledging and being honest with yourself and not trying to downplay or even disparage your own inner how you feel.
Yeah. And then there also needs to be a little bit of a solution portion to this conversation, right? Because everybody has experienced grief and loss, right? We just talked about that, and they may not realize it. Hopefully, right? Something clicks for somebody that's like, man, I've had these symptoms and this is what happened. So they start to accept and understand that this is the result of the grief and loss. But I mean, what, in your opinion, what are some steps that people can take to start to seek out some help for this, right? And we're going to give the basic ones, of course.
Well, I think I should at least give a nod to, you know, my friend Brent Richter, who's a clinician that I've known for a long time, and I love his information. You're welcome to look him up. He's a fascinating human being. He comes from first responder. He was a state trooper in Minnesota for years, and then he went on to get his counseling and did some deep diving into this grief and loss issue. And so at least kind of, you know, part of the plagiarism is actually saying, hey, this is what we're talking about is a little bit of Brent stuff. But his concept, I love the fact that, he talks about, looking at what you have left, what, instead of spending time on what you've lost, spend a little bit of time on what is left. What do you have now? Because loss is, you made the point, loss is going to happen. It's just a part of life. So focusing on the loss will end up, going deeper and deeper into some of these things that we just listed, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a few different things, because I don't, you know, there is the just let it lie and deal with it, right? And people do, that's their solution, right? They just get over it. That's what they think the solution is, right? Get just time. Time is a factor, right? After experiencing grief and loss, I do think it doesn't get easier necessarily, but the pain is less as time moves on. But it's all about action. It's all about little things that can help you move forward. Little things can be as simple as a little memorial tattoo or a visit to a therapist every once a year, just to talk about things. It's celebrating the death anniversary, right? Like, it's these little action steps that, because a lot of people don't want the memory to go away. That's their most important piece, right? They don't want to forget that person or that animal or the marriage or whatever it is. So it's small steps to recognize that you don't have to and keep the memory alive.
Sure. What do I have? You know, what do I have now? And what can I do to join and commemorate what I lost with actually what I still have? And then there's another component of it, which is hope. And I know that's a tall order for people who are in that. I've experienced this. But as you move forward and have these honest conversations with yourself, there comes a point where you start to look at what could be. You know, maybe there is something I can do alongside this grief that I have. Could I, you know, live my life in honor of, if we just look at the loss, yep, you know, of life piece, what could I do to live my life in honor of that person? Right?
Yeah. That's a huge piece, right? Like, what I've seen work the most for people is when they say, I'm going to now succeed for, you know, quotes, for this person, right? Like, I am going to now improve different facets of my life in honor of this person. So they can utilize
you hear it phrased different ways. I owe it to this person, or this segment of my life I'm going to devote to being better because of this person, you know. And those are all forms of hope or reframing, you know what's next or what's possible or what I can be. I think it's really important to exist in some of those grief pieces, but I also think it's really important that we exist also in this what's next chapter. Otherwise it's a pretty dark way to live.
Yeah. You get lost in it, right? Like that's the biggest thing. Don't get lost in your grief. There is a way out, right? Like that's a huge portion of it. And, you know, to allow yourself to get there, because we shame ourselves and say, I should feel this way, right? Allow yourself to honor someone's memory, whether it doesn't matter who it is, but I think
it's oversimplifying to say we can just gratitude ourselves out of it. But I think gratitude is a reflection of, and of this reframing our life to exist with grief and loss. But I know personally where I am now, my ability to be grateful is a culmination of working really hard through a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's part of it too. And when you overcome some of that crazy shit, you are now a lot more resilient in your life.
For sure.
As you move forward. It's that I've done it before, I can do it again.
If you were going to challenge some of the listeners, maybe as we kind of close out here, you know, what would you say to the listeners and saying, hey, if you're in this spot, try this on for size and just use some of these things, or maybe what would that be?
Man, so I've been in this spot a bunch. In the first year of my sobriety, I lost four family members. And I remember just that was the reframe of everything, was exactly what you talked about. I still have my mom, my sister. That's the challenge. Reframe. What do you have to live for and to be successful for? You know, part of it, like, it, as dumb as it sounds, one of my dogs was that for a little bit. Like, I love this freaking dog so much, and she needs me to take care of her. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be better for the dog. Now that's sounds dumb, but it is 100% accurate, like, for me. So it's the reframing, exactly what you talked about. The challenge is to see what you still have available in your life and the people that care about you and need you to be there
for. I love that. Yeah, that's powerful. And if I were to answer my own question, I would say, it sounds goofy, but giving yourself some grace and permission to move out of it. I think oftentimes we get stuck in it thinking we deserve this, or it's mm-hmm. part of my penance for, you know, that's part of that regret and, you know, all the things. But giving yourself permission to actually pursue something hopeful, pursue joy and peace. And because a lot of times we've done some things that we regret, some of the things on our list, and now mm-hmm. we've hurt and wounded ourselves or those around us, and we feel like that's somewhat of a penance. And so mine would be, give yourself grace and permission to actually pursue joy and peace. And I'm not saying at all, I hope nobody misunderstands, this is not, you know, dismissing whatever was lost, but it's acknowledging what was lost and giving yourself permission to actually live a life of peace and joy and serenity. And then pursue happiness with those around you and what you have left, what's on the table still. So, yeah, great conversation, man.
Beautiful. Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. This was a good conversation. I enjoyed that. Enjoyed this one particularly more than I have others. So,
well, with that, listeners, thanks once again for jumping on and paying attention to us. We love you guys, and be safe and be healthy. We'll see you soon.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's First Responder Resiliency Program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. it addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.